are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hi, gang. You've probably heard of voltage, current, and power, volts, amps, and watts. Well, in this video, I'll explain what the current and amps are. Let's start with this small circuit. Inside the wire are atoms, with protons and neutrons in the center, and electrons surrounding that. The protons don't move, but some of the electrons are free to move between the atoms. The protons are positively charged, and the electrons are negatively charged. But what is charge? Charge is a property of these particles that affects how they behave when they interact with each other. Unlike charges, attract each other. For example, after all this rubbing, my hair has more positively charged protons than electrons, and is attracted to this balloon that has extra negatively charged electrons. And like charges repel each other. These two balloons both have extra negatively charged electrons, where they were rubbed, so they repel. So we have negatively charged electrons moving down the wire, and positively charged protons just sitting there. Finally, we can say what current is. Current is the flow of charge. In this case, the flow of charge along a wire. The amount of negative charge that passes here every second is the amount of current. Charge is measured in a unit called the coulomb. To get just one coulomb of charge, it takes 6.241 times 10 to the 28 electrons, or 6,241 followed by 25 zeros number of electrons. So one coulomb of charge is a heck of a lot of electrons. But when doing electronics, we don't usually use the units coulombs per second. Instead, we usually use the simpler unit, the amp. The symbol for the amp is A. For example, we could say that there are 5 amps running through this wire, or maybe 50 milliamps. We can measure just what the current is using this multimeter. To do that, we have to break the circuit and insert the meter. We set the meter to an appropriate scale and see that the current is around 370 microamps. This flow of the negative charge of electrons down a wire is one way to think of current, and in fact we refer to that as electron flow. But often, instead we talk about the positive charge moving down a wire. This is called conventional current. But wait, I said that the positively charged protons don't move in the wire. And they don't. But back in the 1700s, no one knew about the existence of electrons or protons. At the time, Benjamin Franklin did a lot of experimenting using charge from a Leyden jar, or capacitor. He theorized about an electric fluid, and chose that an excess of electric fluid would be positive, and the lacking of electric fluid would be negative. To Franklin, it followed that the fluid would move from the positive area with excess fluid to the negative area that lacked fluid. It wasn't until 150 years later that the electron was discovered. We now know that for the experiments he was doing, it was the negative electrons that were his excess fluid, and the areas left lacking were left with excess positive protons. It was the negative electrons that flowed from the area with excess to the area lacking. But over those 150 years, the flow of positive charge in a wire became the convention, and engineers still use it today. The formulas still work, so in a sense it doesn't matter. It just causes a little confusion for many when you see a symbol like a diode like this that has an arrow pointing this way, and yet the electrons move this way. There are other ways to produce current too, such as by moving ions around. A neutral atom is one that has an equal number of positive protons and negative electrons. But if you add an extra electron, then the atom has more negative charge than positive charge. It's negatively charged. Or if you remove an electron, then it has more positive charge than negative charge. It's positively charged. We call those charged atoms ions. An example of something that uses ions is a lead-acid car battery. They contain lead plates alternating with lead oxide plates. Between them is sulfuric acid. While they're charged and being used, positively charged hydrogen atoms, the ions, move from the negative plates to the positive plates. In this case, it really is the positive charge that's moving inside the battery, acting as the current. Other examples of current are a corona between two electrodes, or a spark, or an arc. Air is not normally conductive, but if you apply a high enough voltage between two electrodes, as with this lifter, you can cause free electrons and ions to move between the electrodes. That makes the air conductive. It usually appears as a bluish or purplish glow and is called a corona. And of course, moving charge is a current. So always with a battery, we have current with no metal wires. Depending on the circuit, once the air is conductive enough, a sudden and brief rush of charge may cross. That's called a spark. Sparks like that can consist of a lot of moving charge. This is what happened when I was creating strong sparks, playing with ion propulsion and a Star Trek Enterprise model. The current from sparking was strong enough to break a transistor in my power supply. Or if there's a continuous supply of more charge, then the rush may keep going. That's called an arc. So this is a continuous movement of charge through the air, a continuous current. And that's what current and amps are. Well, thanks for watching. See my YouTube channel, rimstar.org, for more interesting videos like this. That includes one about a dissectable capacitor, something that Benjamin Franklin had experimented with. Another about how to make the lifter I showed when talking about corona. And one showing the Star Trek Enterprise model I talked about, this time being propelled using ion wind. And don't forget to subscribe if you like these videos. Or give a thumbs up, or leave a...
crap!
Wait, 21 gigawatts!
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach
nothing that dude's eyes, and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, Toast Shaziz. I'm out here in my mad science laboratory. Hope you all doing well. So today I'd like to talk about outer space and inner space. The two have something in common as far as I'm concerned. If you look with the most powerful telescopes out there in the outer space, you can get some pretty good visuals of things going on out there, like galaxies and such. But when you actually get down to looking at planets way away from where, around the star itself, you can't see the actual planet. They have a method by which they use spectrograph. I can't even say it. Excuse me, I'm still fighting with my teeth. Anyway, they use different colors to try to determine the makeup of planets that are around stars. And they also use the wobble of the star itself to determine whether or not there's a planet and whether or not there's actual size of the actual size of the planet going around the star, determining by the wobble itself. So with that said, nobody actually knows what that star looks like or what it's actually made up of, because they haven't actually been able to travel that far. And the same thing would apply to inner space. When you get down to talking about the atom and the electron, the proton and the neutron, the best that we can get with an electron microscope and modern technology is a fuzzy little image that they then determine on what's actually occurring inside there. So just about all of its theory, regardless of how you want to look at things or your own point of view as far as that goes. Now, the mainstream ostriches and the alternative energy ostriches that scientists / researchers that won't take their head out of the sand long enough to think outside the box for themselves, they'll quote by the book over and over and over again. This is what the book says. This is what the book says. Now, using the model of the proton, the neutron, and the electron, we can come up with theories. All of them are just that. They're theories. All we got is fuzzy images to work from. Now, the day that we can actually get down and get a really good view of what is actually occurring around the atom. Now, they can actually get down, and IBM actually did it. They actually used some atoms to draw little pictures, underneath the microscope, and they actually made a little animation using the atom. But when you start to zoom in on the atom itself, when you get into it's a fuzzy little world down there, because we can't look that deep, just like we can't look as far out into space as we'd like to. It'd be nice if we could actually see through the star and the actual planet itself and zoom in on that planet and know whether or not that planet was habitable, or whether there was life on other planets or whatever. That would be nice. But with the modern mainstream ostriches and the alternative stream ostriches, our potential of actually reaching Star Trek Next Generation or all the scientific basic science fiction movies where you see people flying through space and beaming themselves up from planets and all that kind of stuff, it's going to take a long time at this pace for us to even get even anywhere near there. And that's because there's individuals that are so stuck in the flat earth society that they're not willing to think outside the box. The way that we look at electricity today and the inefficient way that we move energy from point A to point B is disturbing to me. On one hand, you have people complaining how we're destroying the earth and we're wasting all these resources and the ozone layer is getting depleted and the CO2 in the air and Mother Earth is dying because of mankind's actions and stuff. Yet the problem isn't so bad that we're actually going to look into alternative energy designs and actually get things out there on the market for the average Joe to use that would be clean, self-sustaining energy sources that would get us from point A to point B without all the pollution. We know that we can burn water. We know that we can get wind power. We know that we can get solar power. We know that we can pick up radiant energy. We know that we can get energy from the dirt itself. We can make chemical batteries, earth batteries, carbon batteries. It just goes on and on forever. See, our standard points of measurement for all of our different electrical appliances are basically measuring waste energy. If you take a wireless AC tester, you can actually see how far the field comes off of any transformer. There's no need for all of that waste energy in order to get the electron flow that we call electricity. And maybe it isn't a case of the electron even moving at all. Maybe it's just a case of when you disturb that electron everything has its own frequency, and everything has its own field, own magnetic field. There's magnetism all around us in all different levels. So if all you have to do is bump that electron just to disturb that field enough to cause it to lean towards another electron, and those two magnetic fields then couple, making the field longer or wider, a bigger diameter, so to speak, then you do that all the way down the line, and you create this magnetic field that then turn dominoes all the way down to what we call current flow. Anyway, at the beginning of this this show, I played a podcast from rimstar.org. I'll probably go ahead and play that again as soon as I can find it. But in the meantime, think about what we actually know about the electron. Some folks don't even think the electron even exists. So I'm sitting here trying to find this. There's a debate out there in the science community whether or not the electron even exists. All we know is that we've got this nifty fuzzy little image, and the scientists have gathered around, and they've looked at it, and they've pointed out and theorized what's actually occurring at that level. Now, until we can actually get down in there and see that with clarity and to know exactly what's going on, then everything from that point on is just theory. So in my research, I've theorized that it is possible, because everything has its own frequency and has its own field, that if we could disrupt that electron with the right frequency, we would reduce the need to use brute force with a strong magnetic field to shake the electrons loose. There's a whole lot of wasted energy in that process, and in that process you also create friction, which in turn creates heat, and at some point, like above 60 hertz in an electric motor, it will literally destroy those coils in there from the heat. And so if you could stimulate just the electron enough to cause the reaction that causes those fields to couple, or the electron flow itself, without having to use brute force, then you would get the same amount of energy out the other end, with less amount of energy coming in from the input side. Now, of course, it's just a theory, just like everything else. But if this was possible, think about the implications. You would literally be able to find the holy grail of electricity by target specific, the electron itself, and only putting the amount of energy that it takes to actually cause this reaction. So at some point, when you got the strong magnetic field shaking the crap out of the electron to get it to come loose from the atom and move from point A to point B and deliver its charge to the next atom, creating that energy flow, there's a lot of waste energy in there. Whether there's got to be a sweet point somewhere in that whole shaking of things. Could you do, instead of having, let's say, 3,000 RPMs to get this thing, could you go halfway to maybe 1,500 RPMs with that same magnetic field in order to shake that electron loose? And if so, what would that frequency range be? If electricity was used properly, in my view, then you would not have the waste energy, you would not have the excess heat, and you should not have any place to measure that besides the input and the output side, the input voltage and the output voltage on the opposite side. There shouldn't be no waste energy in the middle anywhere. In the wiring itself, shouldn't be no waste energy. Should be just enough of a field to cause the interaction between the electron that creates the energy that we call electricity. So I'm going to go ahead and play this pod again. It's off of a video on rimstar.org. It's called Current and Amps. And listen to what the man says in there.
Hi, gang. You've probably heard of
voltage, current, and power. Volts, amps, and watts. Well, in this video, I'll explain what the current and amps are. Let's start with this small circuit. Inside the wire are atoms with protons and neutrons in the center, and electrons surrounding that. The protons don't move, but some of the electrons are free to move between the atoms. The protons are positively charged, and the electrons are negatively charged. But what is charge? Charge is a property of these particles that affects how they behave when they interact with each other. Unlike charges, attract each other. For example, after all this rubbing, my hair has more positively charged protons than electrons, and is attracted to this balloon that has extra negatively charged electrons. And like charges repel each other. These two balloons both have extra negatively charged electrons, where they were rubbed, so they repel. So we have negatively charged electrons moving down the wire, and positively charged protons just sitting there. Finally, we can say what current is. Current is the flow of charge. In this case, the flow of charge along a wire. The amount of negative charge that passes here every second is the amount of current. Charge is measured in a unit called the coulomb. To get just one coulomb of charge, it takes 6.241 times 10 to the 28 electrons, or 6,241 followed by 25 zeros number of electrons. So one coulomb of charge is a heck of a lot of electrons. But when doing electronics, we don't usually use the units coulombs per second. Instead, we usually use the simpler unit, the amp. The symbol for the amp is A. For example, we could say that there are 5 amps running through this wire, or maybe 50 milliamps. We can measure just what the current is using this multimeter. To do that, we have to break the circuit and insert the meter. We set the meter to an appropriate scale and see that the current is around 370 microamps. This flow of the negative charge of electrons down a wire is one way to think of current, and in fact we refer to that as electron flow. But often, instead we talk about the positive charge moving down a wire. This is called conventional current. But wait! I said that the positively charged protons don't move in the wire. And they don't. But back in the 1700s, no one knew about the existence of electrons or protons. At the time, Benjamin Franklin did a lot of experimenting using charge from a Leyden jar, or capacitor. He theorized about an electric fluid, and chose that an excess of electric fluid would be positive, and the lacking of electric fluid would be negative. To Franklin, it followed that the fluid would move from the positive area with excess fluid to the negative area that lacked fluid. It wasn't until 150 years later that the electron was discovered. We now know that for the experiments he was doing, it was the negative electrons that were his excess fluid, and the areas left lacking were left with excess positive protons. It was the negative electrons that flowed from the area with excess to the area lacking. But over those 150 years, the flow of positive charge in a wire became the convention, and engineers still use it today. The formulas still work, so in a sense it doesn't matter. It just causes a little confusion for many when you see a symbol like a diode like this that has an arrow pointing this way, and yet the electrons move this way. There are other ways to produce current too, such as by moving ions around. A neutral atom is one that has an equal number of positive protons and negative electrons. But if you add an extra electron, then the atom has more negative charge than positive charge. It's negatively charged. Or if you remove an electron, then it has more positive charge than negative charge. It's positively charged. We call those charged atoms ions. An example of something that uses ions is a lead-acid car battery. They contain lead plates alternating with lead oxide plates. Between them is sulfuric acid. While they're charged and being used, positively charged hydrogen atoms, the ions, move from the negative plates to the positive plates. In this case, it really is the positive charge that's moving inside the battery, acting as the current. Other examples of current are a corona between two electrodes, or a spark, or an arc. Air is not normally conductive, but if you apply a high enough voltage between two electrodes, as with this lifter, you can cause free electrons and ions to move between the electrodes. That makes the air conductive. It usually appears as a bluish or purplish glow, and is called a corona. And of course, moving charge is a current. So as with a battery, we have current with no metal wires. Depending on the circuit, once the air is conductive enough, a sudden and brief rush of charge may cross. That's called a spark. Sparks like that can consist of a lot of moving charge. This is what happened when I was creating strong sparks, playing with ion propulsion and a Star Trek Enterprise model. The current from sparking was strong enough to break a transistor in my power supply. Or if there's a continuous supply of more charge, then the rush may keep going. That's called an arc. So this is a continuous movement of charge through the air, a continuous current. And that's what current and amps are. Well, thanks for watching. See my YouTube channel, RimStar.org, for more interesting videos like this. That includes one about a dissectable capacitor, something that Benjamin Franklin had experimented with. Another about how to make the lifter I showed when talking about Corona. And one showing the Star Trek Enterprise model I talked about, this time being propelled using ion. And don't forget to subscribe if you like these videos.
A portable television studio.
Gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
Need constant supplies, and the trip for my urges might verge on perverted, perverted brown tea. I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain. I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant's trunk with a couple of monks who are utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The difference between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please, Earl Grey.
Yes please,
Earl Grey.
Yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely, Assam.
Lovely,
Assam.
Lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Oh, we're gone.
Come on, yes. Wrong.
Yeah. I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swing amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal. Let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long. Ooh,
long.
Ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks. Herbal.
No thanks.
Herbal.
No thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter, it defies my mic. Liken me Peter, Earl Grey, a Sam or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your snorting coffee in a proper cup of coffee. Buttons pop me loving teapots, and Ponty rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour. My hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, I love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell you all that.
Oh, crap! Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. I'm back. You know, looking back through history of all the different discoveries and scientists in history, you know, at one time they said the Earth was flat and it would be heresy for anyone to talk outside that box. You can't say that the Earth is round, even though when your observations see that the ship is coming over the horizon or leaving over the horizon and then weeks later comes back the same way. And it didn't fall off the planet. So to question anything in mainstream science makes you a heretic. See, I like to think outside the box because I believe that thinking outside the box is what actually causes things like new discoveries. If we're ever to make it into the space age, the real space age, to where we're like Star Trek Next Generation or whatever, or any of your favorite sci-fi films out there, then we're going to need to have some thinkers out there. We're going to need some thinkers to question the norm, some thinkers that are willing to step outside that box and say, hey, wait a minute. Maybe, could it possibly be that the book might be wrong, that, you know, these observations, while they serve the purpose, are no longer no longer the standard of which we're going to make any advancements on? Because there's only so far you can go while you're in the box. You know, if you're told that there's continuous limitations on everything that it is that you're trying to accomplish, you can't do this because of the second law of thermodynamics. You can't do this because of the conservation of energy. So if all the known laws of physics are correct, then you have to work within that realm. You can't go outside that realm and you can't make any kind of advancements. If that was the mentality of those years and years ago who questioned the norm, we wouldn't even be as far as we are today. So I dare to question the norm. I dare to ask the tough questions and argue with the mainstream scientists and the mainstream alternative energy researchers, a.k.a. ostriches with their head in the sand. I choose to take my head out of the sand. I choose to take myself out of the box. And that's why I call it mad science. I would rather listen to the guy with the crazy story than I would the guy that's reading directly from the book. I've already read the book. I'm not interested in the book. I'm interested in the anomalies that occur while making measurements. The 9 times out of 10 that you get the same result, I don't care about. I'm only interested in that one particular incident where something different happened. Because I believe it's that something different that could very well be the piece of the puzzle that's missing in order to make an advancement in energy. So we all know that we're floating around in a sea of energy. We all know that everything has its own frequency. Everything in nature and everything in the universe itself is a vibrational frequency of some sort. What actually creates that vibration? It's anybody's guess at this point. What is actually occurring at the atomic level or the quantum level of energy, period, is anybody's guess, because we can only see so far. We can see the atom, we can see that the atom itself has nifty little structures in it. But at some point, to actually visualize what the actual electron itself is or what it looks like is still in the blurry stage. Just like our space telescopes that can only look so far out into space, and when you're looking at the sun, and the sun is blocking out the light of the planet itself, so you can't actually see the planet, but you can tell that something's there because the sun is wobbling. Could it be a case of maybe that star is just wobbling, and there ain't nothing around it? We don't know until we get there. And when we get there and we can actually discover what electricity is, you know, Tesla said the day that mankind figures out what electricity is will be the most profound point in the history of time. And I agree. Because knowing that we're floating around in a sea of energy, knowing that energy can neither be created nor destroyed according to the known laws of physics, then all we're doing, literally, is moving energy from point A to point B. We're not creating anything. All we're doing is moving it from point A to point B and using it. So if we're going to work in harmony with nature and not pollute or not destroy anything of nature or make make people sick with strong magnetic fields or, you know, RF frequencies or whatever, if we can actually get it down to the level that we are controlling this energy at the atomic level, down to the electron itself, to where we're only flicking the electron just enough to get it to release that energy field that is around it. And when that energy field couples with the next electron and so on down the line, then we have what we call electricity. It's just defined slightly different because we're using it slightly different. Instead of going all the way up to 60 hertz and shaking the crud out of the electrons, creating friction, which in turn creates heat, if we just stimulate to the point where we get only the energy that we need without all the excess waste, number one, it doesn't take as much fuel to burn in order to create this amount of energy, or to tap into this amount of energy. And number two, you're not destroying or wasting materials by destroying the actual transformers themselves from overheating. Meaning your electronics would last a whole lot longer. We are using semiconductors and we're cramming power into these semiconductors, and they are creating a massive amount of heat. And so in the circuit world, the biggest enemy of the circuitry is the heat itself. So they put things on the back of them that will actually cool it down using basically air cooling systems, little fins on there, and try to keep these electronics cool, or blowing a fan across it as well, trying to keep them cool. Well, what if we could get that same amount of information transferred through the same amount of chips with less amount of energy, so that we're not creating the resistance or the friction at the electron level that is actually damaging that chip? What if you could do that? You could actually have an appliance or a computer that would last nearly indefinitely because it wouldn't be destroyed by itself by using inefficient means to energize it. This is all I've been saying all along. It's to look outside the box. Sure, read the textbook so that you know what the guy said before you, but then don't chain yourself down to the textbook. Put yourself out there outside the box where you can actually do research. You know, blow some things up, tear some things up in order to try to figure out what makes it tick and find the point that it actually destroyed itself. And then you'll know. You can only take it up this far. Like on your electric motor, it says their range is around about anywhere from 50 to 60 hertz, depending on wherever you're at. That's the frequency range at which these things will operate without destroying themselves. Anything above that, then it will literally cause it to heat up and burn the coating off the copper wire and ruin the appliance. It's as simple as that. So I'm not talking heresy here. All I'm talking about is actually finding the point at which you can stimulate the electron to get the electron release without destroying the appliance in the process, or without wasting energy. If you got a field that's anywhere from 6 inches to a foot away from your electric motor, that's wasted energy. You don't need that field that far out. So if you can tune it back to where you can't even measure that field outside of its casing, then you got an efficient motor, and that motor will last a lot longer. There are people out there that use capacitors to tune electric motors so that they can get them to run on less amount of voltage. So in the alternative energy community, everyone's out there looking for the holy grail. They're looking for zero point energy. They're looking for over unity. They're looking for a method by which they can get out more than they put in. They're trying to basically defeat the laws of physics that they put out there as the laws of physics. And the quest goes on. They continue to try to defy the laws of physics. I got to give them credit for that. But at the same sense, they're going around in circles. Why try to defeat the laws of physics instead of taking and trying to defeat it? Why not try to get the laws of physics to work in your favor? Such as if it creates heat, use the heat and do not waste that energy. Use everything that nature has taught in the energy generation community position, the way that we use electricity. Instead of wasting the energy, find ways to move that energy back into the system and help to maintain or supplement the energy. This is all I'm saying. And so until we get to the point to where we can actually generate electricity that is friendly to the appliance, that's not going to destroy it, and not going to use up massive amounts of resources in order to actually get the energy to begin with, then the only thing you have is the book. You can make your measurements and you can do it by the book. It doesn't change the fact that you're still using an inefficient system and you're still in the Stone Age. No advancements are made. You're just repeating the same cycle over and over again. This is the standard amount of measurement. This is what we have to go by, and so that's what we do. In my line of research, I'm going outside the box, because outside the box is where new discoveries are, and I want the new discoveries. I don't want to repeat the same old thing. Anybody can go in the book, and they can quote word for word from the book. But it takes a real researcher to step outside the box and say, wait a second, what if, just what if, that book is wrong? What if the things that were discovered before that book, the things that were discovered before the electron discovery, what if somebody would have said that's the end of the box, and we would have never made it this far? I'm not willing to say that the known laws of physics are the limitations that I must adhere to. I'm not willing to say this is as far as we can go as humanity. I believe there is a whole lot more to energy than meets the eye. I believe that nature is an awesome teacher, and I believe that if we continue to look outside the box and take our head out of the sand, then one day mankind will beam themselves up from a planet. Mankind will interdimensionally travel, or time travel, or even warp speed technology, just like you see in the science fiction movies. But it's not going to get that way as long as people are willing to be chained down by a book that tells them this is as far as you go. Now, you can step outside the box, but you always have to keep one foot in the box, because this is what the mainstream ostriches say, and this is what the alternative ostriches agree to. that this is the rule book, and that's the way it stands. Well, if that was the case, then back in the day when Stan Myers was still alive, and he was working on his car and telling people that it would run on water, then he would have never stepped outside that box. He would have never questioned the norm. It takes too much energy to separate the hydrogen atom and the oxygen atom to get enough hydrogen on demand to run the car, is what they would say. So instead of Stan Myers saying, well, you say it can't be done, and so I'm going to agree to you that it can't be done, and I'm just not going to try. Listen to this little pod right here of Stan Myers about the water car. It runs on water. Just hear it out and think about if Stan Myers would have said, oh, okay, well, the laws of physics says and the numbers say, and so you say, and okay, then we're going to burn gasoline and I'm not going to mess with this. We know we can burn water. We know we can burn oxygen and hydrogen.
During the oil embargo of the United States, it alarmed me that a little country over in the Far East could actually cripple the United States. And realizing that the entire industrial base of the United States and the world is based on the supply and the utilization of energy, it became imperative that we must try to bring in an alternate fuel source and do it very quickly. Of course, I thought originally with the right type of funding, we could possibly get it in within 6 months, but reality shows that the 12 to 15 years was more correct in this projection.
Back in the 70s, Stan Meyer set out single-handedly to solve America's energy problems. He decided to do it using water, the world's most abundant storehouse of hydrogen, which is a far more powerful fuel than oil. For 15 years, Meyer has been fighting to get his inventions taken seriously.
Most inventors have to be a loner. You have to be somewhat thick-skinned and don't rely on other people to support you, because they will not. More times than not, an invention is really stolen from the inventors. Even in my prior development of high technology, I've had patents taken from me. I learned from the School of Hard Knocks to be very cautious.
Meyer has always stood out against the crowd. He has no formal qualifications as a scientist, because he didn't wait to graduate from high school, leaving early to go straight into research at the high-powered Battelle Institute in his native Ohio. Now he works full-time as a private inventor. He's built a device with potentially revolutionary implications. There is nothing startling about a machine that can extract the hydrogen from water. What is highly unusual is that it should do so with ordinary tap water. The conventional method is called electrolysis. Meyer has turned that process on its head. Unlike electrolysis, his device doesn't use up large amounts of electric current, nor does it produce an enormous amount of waste heat. For 20 years, he has been refining a method to fracture water, which produces vast amounts of hydrogen on demand. This is not his latest apparatus. He was unwilling to let us point a camera at that. This is the simple device he used to convince a reluctant patent office that his revolutionary concept actually works. Alloy rods, acting as electrodes, are housed in a perspex container that's filled with water. Normal mains voltage is fed in through a transformer, but critically, there is virtually no current consumed, less than half an amp. The result is dramatic. Hydrogen pours off with the flick of a switch. Meyer claims the key is his electronics, which pulses electricity rapidly across the rods at up to 20,000 cycles per second. In a way that's not readily apparent, this process transforms the equation. Whereas in conventional electrolysis, three times as much energy is consumed as is produced in the form of hydrogen fuel, in Meyer's apparatus, the reverse is true. It appears to produce several 100% more energy than it consumes.
Stan has something that's characteristic of the people that sound like they've done something to tap zero-point energy. Has high frequency, high voltage, and there's a combination of the two at which something occurs. With Chernetsky in Russia, it was what he called a self-sustaining discharge. The tube would run by itself. When Stan gets this effect, the amount of hydrogen and oxygen that are emitted off these two electrodes is a step function. It almost boils the water. If I did this with standard electrochemicals, I need current. And the water should rise a degree every couple of seconds. With Stan's, it'll run for a half hour, and the water temperature hasn't changed. Something's different.
Meyer demonstrates this repeatedly without any difficulty, and yet on the face of it, it represents an extraordinary revolution. His measurements over the years suggest 1,700% greater efficiency than conventional electrolysis. And if he's to be believed, he's getting much better results from his latest, still secret invention.
Well, I first got involved with Stanmeyer when I went over there with a couple of colleagues to look at his water-splitting device. And so we arrived at Stanley Meyer. He had a demonstration cell. We filled it with tap water. In fact, I did that myself. And he switched it on, and almost instantly, the three jaws dropped because of the rate at which the gas poured off. It was quite spectacular.
Whatever energy source Stanmeyer had tapped, it was not explicable by the electric power that was going into it. So something was powering it outside of conventional wisdom.
There is no question that the gas coming off in such abundance is hydrogen. Meyer ignites it to produce a high-temperature flame able to cut through metal.
Stanley Meyer has faced a lot of difficulties. He's three times tried to launch the device and produce press conferences at the technical press round, but he's been almost universally slated. In the early days, very much so, they just ridiculed the whole idea. He's getting a little more notice now because some scientists are getting interested. But by and large, science is very intolerant, particularly modern science.
As with Tesla, Griggs and others, Meyer's claims are so far outside the received scientific wisdom that they've been ignored by the majority of the scientific establishment. But then, Meyer has ignored them too. He has poured his energies over the last 10 years into establishing recognition for his claims by getting international patents.
In the processing, there was a great deal of difficulty in trying to process the legal paperwork in such a way as to allow the patent office to fully understand what was actually occurring. And in one instant, we brought the water fuel cell to Washington, D.C., and of course I had tweaked it in such a way to produce an enormous amount of hydrogen and oxygen gas, and the patent examiner said, no, it will not work based on the electrolysis process. And when we turned it on and produced the enormous amount of hydrogen and gas, the examiner finally realized that we were doing exactly that, and went out in the hallway and started screaming and hollering to everybody on the floor, put out all your cigarettes, hydrogen's in the building. So we started laughing and said, well, we certainly convinced everybody in the patent office that we can do what we said we can do.
Even so, the U.S. Patent Office dragged their feet for 3 years before granting patents on the hydrogen-producing device. Since then, against massive resistance, he's managed to get patents established throughout Europe and Japan. But the hydrogen machine was only the first step towards Meyer's ultimate dream. If he gets it right, this application of his technology would change the 21st century in the same way that the Wright brothers and Carl Benz transformed the 20th. He is currently modifying a beach buggy to run on nothing but water. It doesn't have a petrol tank or even a hydrogen container. It has just a tank of water. He's invented a device called a water splitter to replace the spark plug. As the water is injected into the engine, Meyer claims it's fractured into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burned as fuel. Meyer is working on a kit to modify any engine. He hopes to demonstrate it on this car within 12 months.
And of course, the blessing to the use of the water as a fuel source, that on combustion, the byproduct is water mist. So we're even solving the environmental pollution problem at the same time that we're using water to maintain the industrial basis of the world.
Meyer is protective about his inventions to the point of self-confessed paranoia. Most observers describe him as a crank and his car as an aberration. But then madness and genius often go hand in hand. Meyer shares with many inventors a problem that goes well beyond paranoia. As an engineer with no scientific background, he faces a giant hurdle when he tries to communicate with scientists.
One problem is that the language that people use when they're trying to describe their inventions is not the language that I as a scientist am used to, and so I have to translate it, if you like, into a way that I can begin to understand what they're trying to say. It might as well be written in Swahili for all of the sense that it initially makes, and so I'm not particularly inspired to put a lot more effort in the hope that the pearl of wisdom will reveal itself to me.
Enterprise. Its continuing mission.
To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations.
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
So, if you listen to that clip about Stan Myers, you could understand my frustration that all the alternative energy guys in the past, Tesla and Stan Myers and many more, that the mainstream science didn't want to hear what they had to say. It was against the book. It was against the grain. And then there was a comment in the chat room about something that was said in the deal about the Sky Blue Eye said, so when speaking to a scientist, you must first have a translation book, English to scientific Swahili gobbledygook. That's pretty much the way it is, brother. That's what you gotta be able to. If you can't speak their terminology, it's like trying to go up to a doctor and tell him, you know, with a redneck accent what you think's going on, and the doctor trying to understand it from their college education, you know. All they got in their brain is a roadmap of what they were taught is to be right, when it may be a case that they're wrong to begin with. And so, if as far as we can go is what the book says, if the laws of physics are definitely written in stone, then we're never going to get to the point where we can travel faster than the speed of light, or even interdimensional travel or time travel or anything else that you would see on the scientific science fiction deal there. So, you know, when I talk about I don't care about current watts and amps is because I'm trying to make an attempt to redefine how we actually tap into that energy. So if you want to use the measurements of currents, watts, and amps, then from that point you need to wait until after I've stored the energy and you're beginning to use it into your inefficient appliances that we all have in our homes today. Because all I'm wanting to do from point A to point B is to use high voltage to stimulate an inert gas and create the frequency range by which I can actually adjust it to the specific frequency that it takes to shake loose or even disturb the electron to get the electron to release the amount of energy that normally occurs whenever you're running your appliances through the copper wires that we use. You know, at one point, you know, when Tesla was talking about transmitting energy wirelessly through the air, everybody looked at him cross-eyed because that wasn't the conventional way of thought. Stan Myers talking about burning water for fuel, and the only thing you get coming out of exhaust is water. You know, they looked at him cross-eyed. You can't get through the known process enough hydrogen on demand to actually run this vehicle, so it won't work. They didn't want to give him a patent. You heard that it took 3 years for the patent office to finally come around and give him a patent on one of his designs. So this isn't something that I alone's up against, or all these other people who think outside the box is up against. In the alternative community, you have a whole lot of ostriches out there that are so book smart and educated, whether it be a college and mathematics and everything that you get when you go to a college and get your sheepskin, so to speak, or your piece of paper that says that you're a genius. You know, once they got that knowledge in their head, that's as far as it goes, and they don't want nobody to question that knowledge, because that would have to entail that they possibly wasted many years sitting in college learning the basic laws of physics and so on and so forth, only to find out that some crazy, wild-haired, mad science guy on the other side of the globe turned around and blew it all out of the water by accidentally coming across another discovery that turned the scientific community upside down on its head. So if everything in this world is a vibrational frequency, whether it be via sound, harmonics, or whatever it turns out that electricity really truly is, when it all comes down to it, years in down the line, they'll look back into history and they'll say that in the 1800s they thought this, and then in the 1900s they discovered this, and then in the year 2000 they topped it with another discovery, this, and the technology got better to where we could actually physically with our eyes see what was literally occurring with the atom, the proton, the neutron, and the electron. Maybe by that point we might even find out that there is no electron. Maybe we might find out that it's something completely different than what we were told all along. It's that thinking outside the box. This is why I go to YouTube and I find people out there who are looking into things that mainstream scientists says does not exist and is not possible. These are the individuals that I want on my dream team. The ones who are willing to step completely out of the box, to go against the mainstream science and question the norm. Maybe the norm is right. And by their definition, what they've read from the book is the standard way of measurement. It is the standard definition agreed upon by the mainstream scientists and even some of those ostriches in the alternative energy community. But that is not the standard of measurement that will define the future of energy usage. That is the only that only serves as an anchor to the feet of those out there who are wishing to make an advancement in science to bring us as humanity into a furtherment and basically take us into the science fiction portion of what we call reality, whether or not we can exceed the speed of light, travel from this planet to planets millions of light years away in our lifetime. This is the whole key behind Shaziz Mad Science. Is if I wanted to read the book, if I wanted to preach the book, then I would read the book and I would preach the book. I want to step outside the box. I want to bring others outside the box and open their mind to possibilities and potentials in all different directions. We will never find the truth if we do not seek the truth with all eyes wide open. With one foot in the box, one eye on the book, and the other eye out into space, you might have a chance. But I think you're going to get there just a hair faster when you get completely out of the box and you question all information. As it stands, we have seen. We have seen that it's the guys who are questioning the norm, like Tesla and Myers, Bedini, and all the different guys out there in the alternative energy community who have actually piqued the interest of other individuals who don't necessarily agree that the earth is flat. This is where I come from. And so anytime somebody wants to drag me back into the box, I'm not going. I will kick and scream and raise a ruckus as much as possible, and I will remain outside that box even if I'm there alone. If I'm successful in my endeavor and my theories are correct, then we will find a way soon where we can literally stimulate just the electron itself, if the electron truly exists, or the actual field itself that we are visualizing as the electron, If the standard model isn't correct, and there is no proton, neutron, and electron, if there's something else going on there, and we can stimulate that something else enough to create the energy flow that we call current watts and amps, and still run the efficient appliances, isn't that what the alternative energy community is seeking all along? The holy grail, over unity, zero point energy? I say free energy. Free energy is the right bet, because when's the last time you ever got a bill from the sun? When's the last time you ever got a bill from the wind, or a bill from the dirt, or a bill from the air itself? In our atmosphere, we've got hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, several different gases floating around. There's energy all around us, and radio waves, and waves, energy waves from space. And so Tesla had a radiant energy patent, to which he would put a big metal plate up in the air and actually drag energy down. The atmospheric group are pulling 2,000 volts out of the air from two 200-foot tall poles with a length of wire stretched across it with nanoparticles of carbon attached to it. And so they're using nanotechnology to drag energy directly out of the air. No input. It's just materials that are capable of collecting the energy, such as you and your rubber shoes rubbing across the carpet and then walking over and touching on your brother's ear and lighting him up with a big old static discharge. So what we know about electricity to this point is what the books say. Those who quote from the books are quoting correctly as they're quoting from the books. But question the norm. Are the books correct? Is what we think of electricity really what is the case that electricity is? We know that there's energy all around us. We know that we are energy beings. We have electricity flowing through our brains. I put out videos, and when I put these videos out, such as me touching a magnet and a wire and being able to get a voltage up in the actual volt range instead of the millivolt range, and people will come on there and say, well, you know, that's capacitance from your body, or this or that, or from the earth battery, a galvanic action that's creating this or that or whatever. Regardless of what they say and regardless of what they quote from the book, it's still energy. There is something occurring there. And if we could find this on an atomic level, what this actual cause is, and we can tap into that energy, we can find energy that will literally work in harmony with nature without destroying nature. As it stands, we take huge machineries full of gasoline or diesel, and we dig up coal, and we drill for oil, and we do all this brute force methods by which to drag energy out of the ground, while wasting a massive amount of fuel, while polluting the air itself and the water around, injecting toxic waters down into grounds and causing seismic activity and potentially polluting water aquifers and such. And guys like Tesla and Stan Myers and myself and people who were willing to think outside the box are saying, wait a second, you know, why go through all that trouble? Why do all that if you're so concerned about the environment, if you're so concerned about whether we're going to run out of oil or whether we're going to be overseas fighting somebody else for their resources? Why not listen to these guys who are thinking outside the box? Why stretch thousands and thousands of miles of cable when you can send it wirelessly through the air or through the earth itself and do it at a range by which it's not making people sick from too many RF frequencies or microwaves or whatever? The way that we use electricity is not only inefficient, it can be harmful to the environment, it can be harmful to the human body. And so We're still in the Stone Age. I'm outside the box trying to drag the world out of the Stone Age and say, look, question the norm. Question the book. Question mainstream science. And look for the solutions that I know are there. Nature is an awesome teacher. And if you watch nature, you'll find out that there is a lot of energy in nature. There is a device out there called the Lord Kelvin Generator. I talked to my buddy Ryan briefly about it yesterday. And it's literally where water is falling through these metal cans. It builds up a static charge and puts a high voltage arc across two leads in a spark gap. That's water. So you're getting energy from falling water. As that water drops are falling through and bumping into things and charging and discharging, sharing the energy that's built up, and then charges up that can and then turns around and arcs across. There's something going on there. There's something going on there with your wind turbines and your solar cells. If we take all these pieces of the puzzle, everything that we learn from nature, and the scientists prior to us who have actually created devices that everyone else scoffed at, they laughed at Stan Myers, they laughed at Tesla, they laughed at everyone else in the same field of research in there, and they're going to continue to laugh at all of us out there who are literally out of the box with our head up out of the sand. So I'm talking to the folks out there in the alternative energy community. Don't be an ostrich. Take your head out of the sand and look at things that were told to not be possible. Test. See if you can blow it up. See if you can get it to work. That's how it happens. You don't find discoveries. There's not going to be any new discoveries. As long as you contain yourself within that box and you say, these are the limitations that science has put on me. These are the limitations that I will abide by. And so I won't go any further than this, because the law of conservation of energy says you can't get out more than you put in. Energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So with that said, we're not destroying energy. We're not creating energy. We're just tapping into the sea of energy that we're all floating in. That's a fact. Everywhere around you is energy. So now you know where Shaziz Mad Science stands. Now you know why I think outside the box. And I will continue to do so no matter how much criticism I fall under. I will continue to point out things. I'll continue to do crazy videos. And I'll continue to show people things in videos that if they pay attention to, might just learn something. And I will do videos just like the old turn your coffee pot into a project timer. Some folks, it may not be that big of a deal, but to recycle things instead of throwing them in the trash, I think that's a good thing if you're worried about Mother Earth. I think that anything that thinks outside the box, anything that recycles, truly recycles instead of throwing it away, anything that is going to produce clean, free, alternative energy that would take the average Joe out from underneath the thumb of the power companies, the oil companies, and the companies out there that are literally taking us to war for other people's resources. I think that any step forward that we can make as humanity is a good move forward. And so with that said, if you're in the alternative energy community and you want to drag Shaziz back down the rabbit hole of mainstream science, you got your work cut out for you, my friend. I say peace and love to you. So with that said, I'm going to take a breather right here and see if any one of the mad science guys want to join in on this conversation and tell me where they think I'm wrong. Peace and love. Stay tuned. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science.
read the Gazette to catch up on the news. Some classified adverts I chanced to peruse when I saw a category called steampunk. I turned to it eagerly but left in a funk, for I quite enjoy the steampunk aesthetic, but what I beheld there was rather pathetic. These intrepid online auctioneers have just taken modern objects and stuck on some gears.
It's simply not crickets, it shouldn't be done,
but it's clear how their thoughts had run.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
But it got even worse than that, I'm afraid, and as I went on I became more dismayed, for they often didn't modify the things they wanted me to buy.
Heavens to Betsy, a land of unregrets.
Steampunk is more than a mere mode of dress or decoration, so it brings me some distress to see a metal cicada described with that name, or a teacup, a mood ring, a silver gilt frame. Gluing on gears at least takes effort. This is sloth of the worst.
Just do some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Steampunk refers to a type of science fiction about alternate past, not future prediction. Often set in Victorian Britain, but the history of technology has been rewritten. So put a bit of thought into your designs. Use leather and brass, 19th century lines. Retrofuturistic is a good explanation. Blend antique reality with imagination. But calling things steampunk to try to sound cool makes you look like a bloody fool.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Gauges and rivets, copper tubing and glass lend a steampunk creation a real touch of class. Gears are appropriate to introduce if they look like they have a legitimate use. Although Nixie tubes are undeniably splendid, they date from long after the age of steam ended. Pity really, I just love Nixie tubes. Anyway, I hope you've comprehended. So use the word steampunk correctly, old chap, and don't use it to refer to crap.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Shazam's Mad Science. I've been joined by my friend Terry Woodruff. How you doing, brother?
I'm great this morning.
Cool.
How about everyone else?
So, you know, back in the day when Tesla was around, he actually had an electric car back in that day. And the way that he had it running, the mainstream science guys were under the impression that he must be running off of witchcraft, because they couldn't explain how it was that he was doing what he was doing. And so with that said, their closed-minded vision on things would basically hinder society, because if they were to listen to Tesla way back then we would potentially be running around with cars today that didn't have to have internal combustion fossil fuels to be running. So what do you think about that, man?
I have no doubt whatsoever that we would have reactive power wherever and whenever we needed it at this point. And it can be charged something as simple as an earth battery, which is just two metal rods stuck in the ground.
Yeah.
You can put that in a flower pot and it works. I can light LEDs with potatoes. I'm just saying, there is reactive power everywhere. It's all around us, like you said. It's what we're made of. You have a spoonful, you know, you could probably travel to Mars.
But if we're set boundaries, if we have set boundaries that the mainstream schools teach and mainstream science say that these are the boundaries and you can't never exceed them, how are we to ever realize whether or not the Earth is round or whether the Earth is not flat unless we're willing to step outside the box and question, you know, if the Earth is flat, why is it that that ship goes over that hill and then later on, weeks later, comes back over the hill? It didn't seem to fall off the Earth, so could it possibly be? Is it even remotely possible that the Earth is round? You know what I'm saying?
Is space curved?
Yeah, or is it flat?
You know, is time affected by the curvature of space or the speed of light? We don't know these answers. These are questions for our Creator once we meet Him, I think. And this human body is so limited anyway, and then other philosophies and sciences put limits on our very thought. And it's, to me, that's a thought crime, because you're holding humanity back from what its true potential. And these thought crimes are being committed every day in all shapes and sizes, not just our mad science realm. Religion, creed, race were being divided. It's been happening for hundreds of years. And people are waking up to it at least faster than ever, thanks to the internet and Shaziz Radio and others.
Well, that's why I'm looking around this world for guys like you and me that are willing to think outside the box, man. Because I don't see any advancements coming as long as there's limitations. You've had some pretty cool things going on with that Slayer Exciter. There's only a few components in that Slayer Exciter that actually makes it function, but you've had some really good things going on with that. You want to talk about that any?
Well, I just want to say that it's endless. You can never stop experimenting with it. You know, I mean, unless you just give up. If you give up, it's fine. But the Slayer Exciter and similar circuits with little transformers involved and little ferrite rods and windings, you're generating a reactive power. It's kind of what Tesla tried to teach us. You know, he invented the air core transformer and frequency and resonance. He also told us, if you want to understand the universe, think of it in terms of frequency and vibration.
Exactly.
And resonance with electricity is one of the ways to get a reactive power, where it's at least unity, and because the energy is all around us, it is free energy if you do it right. I mean, even if you're using the dirt to create a galvanic reaction, you know, all these things are free energy because we're not having to pay the establishment for ways to produce our own. And that's what they want us to, you know, they don't want us to realize that. Much.
It was said,
we don't need them.
It was said that I don't know nothing about Tesla, that I don't understand Tesla's work, but I understand that what he was talking about, frequencies and vibration and stuff like that, I understand that there was something else that he was trying to point out to everybody, that maybe what we considered electricity to be wasn't what it was that the mainstream science guy said. That there was more potential to it. Just like you said, getting energy out of the dirt or energy out of the air or from the sun or the wind or whatever. No, we're
our good friend Dryden, he says that there's potential difference in everything, and that if we worked on it enough collectively, we could probably get electricity from all potential differences.
Well, and I agree.
Similar metals and chemical reactions. It could be the fact that, and we know it's true, there are devices that do all of the above that he's talking about. And just like you're a combined energy generating machine. It could be winds, earth, Lord Kelvin's thunderstorm with a Slayer Exciter and a Jewel Thief combined with, you know, all these things can be made bigger and better.
Well, nature always really doing it. Nature always balances itself out, like such as water finding its own level. You can have a 3,000-mile-long hose, and you can measure it from the ground on each end of that 3,000-mile-long hose, and both ends are going to be the same amount of distance off the ground. And we know this. They use it to, when they put up mobile homes, to use it to level out mobile homes. The water level is the best level you can get. They got a long hose with water in it, and on one end they'll bring it up to the level of one side, and then all they do on the other side is match it to that same level, and that thing is perfectly level. So with that said, even with the electron, if you follow through, if you believe in the electron as it's said in the standard definition of how the proton, the neutron, the electron, and the atom is all, you know, clustered there together, all you're doing is you're destabilizing nature long enough to get an energy release out of that electron. So instead of using brute magnetic force to rip it off, you know, and cause all the friction and heat, what if you could stimulate that electron just enough to get that same energy release without having to put as much energy into it and getting the same amount of energy out? What if? What do you think?
Well, it's kind of being done in a lot of ways. Like, for instance, we go back to the Slayer Exciter. It excites those gases in the tube with practically nothing compared to what it normally requires to fire that tube up. With the you know, the filaments on both ends being energized at the same time, and all that. When a Slayer, it don't even have to be connected to the bulb. It's just a wave. Are those electrons being brute forcefully hammered through the air? I don't know, because it's using less power than conventional systems.
It could be that we're not moving them at all. It could be that all we're doing is rocking them side to side, and so when the field around the electron gets close enough to the field around the next electron, we already know that magnetic fields couple with each other and create one single field. So now you have a larger field. From the more electrons that are coupled, the more field you got. And so what if those electrons are just rocking just enough just to cause that coupling effect and creating that energy release that's going down the wire that is what we call electricity? What if that's the case, as opposed to the whole electron moving from one atom to the next, as the standard says?
Right, that's how they teach us in the beginning in electronics class. Okay, they line up some marbles, and you put, you know, you flip one marble on one side, and the marble at the other end of the line of them jumps out. And they say, and that's how electricity works. But that is to hide the truth.
Yeah, well, think about this for a second. If electrons are really moving on the actual wire itself, when you're running your electricity through that wire, you end up with the same amount of material that you started with. You're not losing anything. All you're doing is shifting it from point A to point B. So what if, by my theory, what if those electrons aren't moving at all? What if they're just rocking enough to give that energy release? What if they're not even, like I said, they're stationary, just being rocked back and forth, kind of like water molecules in your microwave, where they're rocking back and forth, creating friction, which in turn creates heat and cooks your food. What if that's the case, as opposed to the actual electron flow itself? What would that mean in mainstream science?
We know that's true, basically, with alternating current. It's rocking back and forth at 60 cycles a second, which means that the marble is being kicked off at the end and put right back in to go the other direction at 60 times a second, or 50 if you're in the UK, and so on.
So if you went up to, instead of 60 cycles a second, what happens if you went up to 1,000 cycles a second and you literally kicked that electron completely off the copper atom? I mean, it was gone.
You could use the same amount of electricity on the other end with less amps, no, you know, less heat. These high-frequency circuits, I've noticed that it's cold electricity in a way. I mean, you can light up incandescent bulbs really bright with a high-frequency alternating current that could be inductively coupled, like the experiments I've done with the pancake coils, Tesla's patent. They make a very strong magnetic field that you can couple with and light things up with just circles of wire attached to a bulb. It picks that wave up, but it don't shock you when you touch it. The electricity goes away. It takes it out of resonance, in other words.
Yep.
You could put that in, you know, it could be conventional electricity, but the electricity in the wall socket at 120 volts at 60 cycles will make you grab it if you get a hold of it, and you will squeeze it until you're dead. But if it were at a higher frequency, you wouldn't. So,
you know, nature, you said something backwards. You said something that hit a key. Nature has put in place things in our own body that, you know, certain things like taste or smell that would tell you not to eat something, and there's probably a really good reason why you shouldn't eat it because it's not good for you. So if you're using energy and it hurts, then could it potentially be that nature put something in place to say that at this frequency range, you're going to die? And so why don't you back it off of here? You'll get the same amount of work that you want. And instead of nature taking you out, you know, nature will work in harmony with you. This is what I'm saying, man.
Right. And Tesla tried to show us a lot of this. You know why a taser hurts so bad? It's because it's low frequency. It's only a couple of times a second, but it will shock the crap out of you.
And it hurts.
If it were a million times a second, it would be like a Tesla coil. You can, you know, you get away with touching a million volts, and it just tingles a little. And,
yeah, and you showed Ryan how to do that. See, Ryan, and until I knew that you and him was getting together and showing stuff, Ryan was the only individual that I ever knew who was willing to walk up and shake hands with a bolt of lightning.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't no thing. And to me, you know, that's saying something. That's saying you're outside the box and you're on the right track, because if it's not killing you, if it's not dropping you to the dirt, you're getting closer to where you need to be as far as energy goes. Am I wrong?
It's definitely a new source of energy that could be utilized in the future if we have to, say, make our own power grid or start over from scratch. Who knows?
So well, you guys are energizing bulbs in midair, man. You know, there's something going on there. Tesla did it. You know, we've all done it as far as...
Tesla did all these things like disruptive discharge just to get people's attention.
Yep.
I think we could utilize some of that to get people's attention. So that's why I built a monster Tesla coil, you know, really. That's not really where I'm researching alternative energy. That's just where I'm trying to understand electricity itself.
Well, he put on a light show for him. He put on a light show for him. He got their attention enough that some of the big money guys back in the day moved in for the kill, so to speak, you know, to steal his ideas and make as much money as they possibly can. You know, like Westinghouse and General Electric now got all the information and that kind of stuff, and they're making billions. They don't want guys like you and I saying, "Hey, man, maybe you can get this for free." You know what I mean?
Right.
So with that said, you know,
the general public don't realize that simply rotating a magnet near a coil of wire is where all of our electricity comes from.
Yep.
And that's basically what Tesla gave us as an example of free energy. Where does that energy come from? And after it passes through the circuit, where does it go to?
I believe that that magnet, a strong magnetic field, is actually coupling with the field around the electron itself. If you go by the model of the proton, neutron, electron of the atom, I believe that that magnetic field is coupling with the electron itself, and it's shaking it around. And so with that said, there has to be a sweet point in there. Like I mentioned earlier, I just used hypothetically, say you're spinning your generator, your magnets past your coil at 3,000 RPMs. What if you didn't need 3,000 RPMs? What if you could cut that in half and still get the same amount of results without all the waste energy, such as the huge magnetic field around every electric motor and transformer? So if you could dial that back to just enough to move that thing to create that same reaction, wouldn't you have a generator or electric motor that would last longer because it wouldn't be getting hot?
Yep.
Well, that's where I'm coming from in my whole deal, where I keep saying and I make everybody out there mad, even in the alternative energy community, when I say I don't care about current, watts, and amps, all of that. We'll worry about that when we get down to measuring after the energy has been stored into, let's say, a capacitor bank. When you go from that point on, then worry about it, whether you've got enough to run the inefficient junk that we've created all these years. By now, we should have such efficient appliances that they're barely running off of any electricity. But we don't. We're still wasting energy. You know, even the Energy Saver bulbs has an inefficient transformer in it. It doesn't take that much energy, and you've proven that with a Slayer Exciter. It don't take no 120 volts of AC current to light up a little fluorescent light bulb. I've seen it done on like 3 volts. What do you think?
Well, we all know that it's true that you could generate light. Tesla, that's the first thing he did, was fluorescent lighting in his shop.
Yep.
To show everyone there's a different way, and it was way more efficient than all those Edison bulbs on the DC power. And, you know, the system still tried to fight Tesla and say that he was crazy even then.
They still try to fight him today.
That's what I'm saying. They were fighting him by killing elephants and puppy dogs on the street. This is the kind of people we're still dealing with.
Well, I'm going to keep on doing what it is I do. I'm going to keep on accepting the ridicule and the laughter and the mocking and telling me I'm stupid. And I've been called worse, believe me. On my YouTube channel, you wouldn't believe half the stuff that people have said to me.
Oh, well, people, they don't have nothing better to do. They're not doing any research of their own. They're not discussing anything with others to try to get to the bottom of things. These people basically are trolls.
Yep.
They've got nothing better to do.
Well, as long as they're wanting to keep their head in the sand and quote from their college books or even their basic school science books and tell me, you know, I have to stay in the box.
They
don't have to stay.
They want to be stuck in the matrix. Some people want to, you know, they want to fight for the matrix.
Yeah, that's one thing about that movie. They said that there's those who will fight to keep it, you know.
Yeah. Give me that steak. I don't care that it's fake.
Well, I'm going to stay outside the box because I like freedom. Freedom's cool. I'm a rebel with a cause, and that's freedom. I want my freedom, and I'm going to keep my freedom because it's my freedom. What do you think, man?
Man, I wish the world had freedom.
Well, we're trying to gradually, step by step, inch by inch, drag everybody out of that box to freedom. And until we get that point, we just need to keep on steady and keep on doing our research and doing things that the mainstream science guys don't agree with. And that's the way I stand. Brother, we're down to the last 1 minute. Why don't you give everybody your YouTube channel so that people can come over and see what you're working with your Slayer Exciter.
Well, my YouTube is simply my name, Terry Woodruff, and it's spelled W-O-O-D-R-O-O-F.
Well, brother, I appreciate it, and I know everybody else after they see your research is going to appreciate it as well. Keep up the good work, and I love your videos, and love the stuff that you and Ryan's been working on, and I love the fact that you guys are willing to step outside the box and at least have a discussion about something different than what we've been taught.
Exactly.
All right, peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned for the Hope Show, and stay tuned for the Mad Saturday, the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow.
Operator, give me the number for 911.